Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 574 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again by Chad Smart. Chad, how are you this week?
I am, I just came in from building my ark. We've gotten
a lot of rain. Huh?
It's been raining for about 36 hours straight.
Wow.
And at least it'll help with fire season, hopefully. Yeah, so other than that, trying to stay dry, and we were talking beforehand, before we started recording, that just working on the Out of Touchstone series, Pharaoh's Vault, which looks at Hollywood Pictures. I pointed out on Twitter the other day that our first video to get over 100 views, so
nice
racking up those. I think some kid that opened a box of Legos got 100 views in like 30 seconds. So.
Maybe you need.
I'm doing well. What's that?
Maybe you need Legos on your next episode.
Maybe. Did you hear that the this new Lego series, the Goonies, like people are lining up? They're like waiting hours to buy them.
No.
Yeah, they're lined up for blocks.
Jesus. I knew there was a hit there. I knew there was going to be some kind of punchline. All right.
It's a very bad punchline. Yeah, I know you want to punch me now, so.
Exactly. Well, we have a lot to talk about this week and actually going to throw a few news and notes out. Easy for me to say before we get into the meat of this week's topics. And I don't know if you saw, Chad, actually just moments before I sent you the link to record this week's episode, news that Bob Caudle, who was the voice of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling back in the day, has passed away at the age of 95. I don't know, we've talked before about our fandom. I remember Bob Caudle in those early years of my fandom, watching CP specifically. Always enjoyed his style, kind of a, obviously not the big flash and pomp and circumstance that we saw with a lot of groups, WWE specifically, but he was solid hand and someone that I thought always did a great job when I think he was part of the very first Starrcade and some of those early years of that. So any Bob Caudle memories for you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I was just thinking, Clash of Champions, he would be on there with JR. And yeah, I don't want to say he wasn't memorable because that sounds kind of disrespectful, but I mean, he was memorable, but he didn't have, like you were saying, the over the top personality, like JR had his slobber knockers and, Jerry Lawler has Lawlerisms and Tony Schiavone has the greatest night in, the history of our sport. He didn't really have a catchphrase or anything. He was just more of a solid play by, and maybe, that's something that wrestling is missing, is just a guy who's there to call it straight and not be, a face or heel announcer.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know much of his time before Mid-Atlantic came around and became kind of mainstream. I say mainstream in terms of, as a young fan in the St. Louis area, we had it on our TV, the syndicated shows and being able to watch it on TBS. So he was always one that I enjoyed hearing and seeing. It was kind of like that comfort, watching, and again, I don't mean any disrespect, but it was that comforting older wise man, the grandpa type of guy that was there to kind of bring some balance. And, not everybody needs to be over the top. You do need that straight man to kind of keep things level, I think, for some of those shows to flow the right way.
I was just thinking, comparing in my mind to Lord Alfred Hayes, but Lord Alfred Hayes was more of like the, what's a good word? I'm trying to think of a way to say stupid without saying stupid. Like, but, and I say that, and I'll explain, is that, you know, when Jerry Lawler, during his last WWE stint, would often say things that were like, oh, why is he doing, you know, why is there a cage match, or, you know, why do they, and I read somewhere where someone's like, well, you need that person because that's the person who speaks for new viewers, you know, people that don't know the history, people that don't know, they're like, oh, why is he doing this? And then you can explain why everybody in AEW has to bleed buckets within 30 seconds of a match starting.
That's a good, you know, the Lord Alfred Hayes and Jerry Lawler explaining things. I like that. I like that. Middle of last week too, we reached an anniversary of, you know, kind of those milestone anniversaries, and that, not a good one by any means, but Eddie Guerrero, 20 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been 20 years. I can still remember you were still working at the TV station, and I walked into the newsroom that morning. This was, of course, before social media and all of that. I think we had MySpace, but that was about it. And you had told me the news as I walked in that Eddie Guerrero had passed away. You were checking the websites and stuff back in those days. And just, I was an Eddie fan, but I wasn't like a super fan. And I definitely think in the 20 years that have passed, I have come to appreciate him more. And especially seeing how WWE and even AEW have continued to kind of keep his legacy alive with wrestlers, I guess more specifically, doing the move sets, whether it's the frog splash or doing the fake out with the, you know, a chair or a belt or whatever it is, that lie, cheat, steal mentality. But man, 20, as we get older, we talk about it all the time. Time just seems to go by so much faster. But any thoughts or memories of Eddie that you want to put out there?
Well, I believe when you walked into the newsroom, because we had tickets already to WrestleMania 22 by this point. And I believe my phrasing to you was something like, well, we're not going to see Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania this year. And you're like, oh, why did he leave? And I'm like, no, worse than that. But yeah, it's interesting that Eddie, you know, has that legacy that is just as strong today as with, actually probably, like you said, bigger than when he was there. And you don't, I can't think of any other wrestler really that has, you know, even the top names. I mean, I guess, you know, there are a few people that still do the Macho Man flying elbow as a tribute, but Eddie is, and I think it helps that his son, you know, is a current WWE superstar.
Oh, it's not his son. Ray got the case.
But yeah, I mean, and you know, yeah, with Mercedes Moné doing it as well. And I guess I didn't see the match, but Dominic and Cena in their match last week on Raw paid tribute with the Eddie breakout spot. And like I said, the only thing that I didn't like was after Eddie's passing, when they gave Rey Mysterio the Eddie Guerrero tribute run. And, you know, everything was about Eddie. And that's why, you know, Rey won the Rumble and won the match at WrestleMania. Did he win the Rumble? Or did he just get
he won the
Rumble.
So do you think that had Eddie Guerrero not passed away or not died the way that he did, would Rey Mysterio have ever had a run as world champ, do you think? I think Eddie had another run, at least another run in himself as
Well, and I don't know if Eddie, you know, because of the rumors at the time, you know, were after Eddie became champion, that the pressure got to him, and so I don't know if he would have wanted another run. And to be, you know, we always say when you get the champ, then you are the face of the company and you got to do all the media. Maybe he, I mean, I obviously he could have been champ in case, and would he have wanted to? As far as Ray, I think Ray would have eventually gotten it, just because we're in that era where seemingly everybody at some point gets at least a 24-hour title reign. So, but I don't think it, I obviously think it would have been a much different situation.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of Eddie and Ray, you know, Dominic, You mentioned the match with Cena the other night, and this kind of all segues into Cena's final run. But also, I still think, and we'll talk more about this probably at the end of the year when we figure out exactly how we're going to wrap up 2025. But Dominic is on my short list of future heavyweight champions. You know, I think that he definitely has some kind of charisma. There's something there that is resonating with fans. He's very over, as the kids say. It's an interesting, and it's probably the ultimate Eddie Guerrero tribute. You know, he's got the mullet, he's got the mustache, he's got some of the move sets, and he tried to do that whole trickery with Cena on Raw. Cena is the new IC champion. Did you expect that? Did you see that coming? There was been speculation he was going to be that, you know, that this was going to happen at Survivor Series instead of happened in Boston. I think I sent you something the other day that John Moxley or Dean Ambrose was the fastest to become a Grand Slam champion in WWE, and John Cena, it took him the longest to become a Grand Slam champion. What are your thoughts? Does Cena need the IC belt? And then how does that play into the last match? Does he retire as IC champion, or will that last opponent be the one to beat him? And if that's the case, then I definitely, and I'm going to admit it now, I'm still holding out hope that Edge is a part of this tournament, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if it was just a random last match, I could see Edge coming in, but have to be there for several matches, I don't. Edge. I did see something, you know, Zack Ryder came in on Friday as the mystery opponent.
Yeah.
And they're saying, like, what if Matt Cardona is the mystery opponent on Monday for Silver? Mm. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. you know, as far as Cena winning the title, I was hoping we would touch on this. And I have two points of view, and they kind of overlap. And one is from the personal standpoint, is I don't care. It's a title. Titles mean very little and who holds them.
Don't say that to Mercedes Moné.
Just won her 13th title last night.
Oh, wow.
The cynical, sarcastic person will say, again, we've talked about it on the show, I don't watch WWE unless it's on Peacock now because I don't have access to anything else. And even when I had Netflix, sitting through an entire Raw, I rarely did because it's just too much. I can't do it. But Cena winning is more of a reason why I don't watch, why WWE doesn't resonate with me. And it's because it's about moments and not cohesive story. Mm. And, you know, I mean, I have no problem with Cena winning the title. But did he win the title to complete the Grand Slam aspect? Did he win it because he was in Boston, his hometown? You know, I think he only has two matches left. I think Survivor Series and then the final match. So, like, again, yes, is he going to go out as champ? Is he going to lose the title back to Dom at Survivor Series possibly? Because they haven't announced what he's doing at Survivor Series yet.
Right.
It's that feel-good moment, and I've watched videos of people that were there at Raw who, you know, thought it was the greatest thing. And, you know, also the other part is you and I were at Ric Flair's retirement. You know, we were at that. And that was meaningful.
At WrestleMania 24. Four, yes.
Yeah. Because we grew up with Ric Flair. You know, that was our guy. Cena, even though been a fan and watched him from his debut with Angle, it was never like, oh my gosh, John Cena's the greatest, you know, or the GOAT. Because, and I think just age,
yeah,
different, you know, it was, weren't heavily, as heavily involved in fandom. So even Cena's retirement, I'm like, I mean, I'll watch, again, it's on Peacock, I'll watch it, but I don't think I'll have the emotional attachment that I had to watching Ric Flair's last match or 10th to last match.
I am going to watch Cena's last match, and I am going to watch, usually, you know, on these big specials, I'll watch it out in the living room, and, you know, my wife is usually there doom scrolling or whatever. I'm going to watch this alone because I do think, even though, and I know it sounds cheesy to say,
you're not going to have your pack pants on, are you?
No. But I do think that I might shed a tear, honestly, it, you know, if I'm being honest, it just
especially if Gunther beats him.
Just because, you know, I do still get nostalgic and I get goosebumps when the Saturday night main event theme comes on. I don't know why, I can't explain it, but it is one of those things that I do think it will be, especially depending on, and I think WWE always comes through when it comes to like the production value and the, you know, the package, the story, the moment, if you will, like you said earlier, in presenting this. And I think it will be an over the top presentation. And I, you know, I don't remember, you know, obviously with Flair's last match, we say last match, everybody know when we talk about Flair's last match, we're talking about WrestleMania 24. You know, I remember feeling the emotion that night. And then when we got tickets and went to the Raw on that Monday and feeling it even throughout that night as well, because they did such a good job with it. So yeah, I feel like even though, like you said, it wasn't that same kind of connection with Cena, I do acknowledge and see the significance that he made to the business, not just the wrestling side of it, but like the whole mainstream aspect of it. And so I think it's going to be a good night. And I again hope it's not Gunther. I have a feeling it's going to be, but you know, we'll deal with it, we'll get through it and whatever. But yeah, I was a little surprised by the IC title win, just because how do we finish this part of the story, and whether it's him retiring and going out as champ and kind of like Sting's AEW final match with the tag team titles, or do they, you know, have him lose it to Dom, like you said, and which I think is kind of dumb, but if that's what they do, I don't, I, you know, obviously I have no clue, but yeah, it should be an interesting last, what, 4 weeks or so as of this recording before that final match comes. And we'll talk all about that too, after the fact, and probably again next week as we lead up to it. So speaking of next week, I do want to remind folks to enter your Survivor Series suggestions, teams. We did this last year. We've gotten a couple so far this year, but basically you throw out a type of wrestler, genre of wrestlers, you know, Undertaker opponents at WrestleMania, for example. And then Chad or I will draw the suggestions out of the gobbledygooker egg. And next week we will decide we'll build our Survivor Series teams. Now we need time to come up with these team names. So I would hope that everybody gets their suggestions in by Friday of this week. I'll put another post out on Facebook about it as well to remind folks. But we had fun with it last year, or at least I did. And so as they say, it's my show. So we'll do what we want to do, damn it. So we are looking forward to doing that. Reminder of the action figure drive, it is going on still as we are getting closer to Christmas. Everything donated goes straight to Toys for Tots. And you know, I mentioned the Undertaker, and Chad, for our blind ranking this week, we're kind of doing a what if scenario, because
is that the Undertaker?
This is the Undertaker. It's the Funko Mystery Mini. It's a different looking version of him. I do have the Jax Pacific first version of the Undertaker, but his limbs have come off. So he's kind of sitting back there resting.
Thought that looked like a Brutus Beefcake, the Disciple Undertaker.
It kind of does. Yeah. This is a different looking version of him. And one that I didn't expect, but 35 years ago this month, The Undertaker debuts. Now, of course, he was Mean Mark Callis in WCW. Had a mediocre, I guess, career over there. Obviously came to the WWF. And I don't think anybody predicted in 1990 that, you know, 30 years later, he would have his last match at Survivor Series 20 or at WrestleMania in 2020 with the Boneyard match. The staying power, the longevity of the gimmick, because it was kind of a cheesy gimmick all through, I think. But I think Mark Calloway, the man, made that gimmick work. And I'm going to assume you agree with that sentiment.
I do.
My question for you this week on our blind ranking is, what if Mark Calaway never existed? What if he was not available to come to the WWF in 1990? So I have five superstars who were in WCW at the time, or one that was in the WWF. Could they have been The Undertaker? Would these character, or would these men who had different gimmicks at the time, would they have worked as The Undertaker? So I want you to blind rank who you think would have been the best alternative to Mark Calaway to be The Undertaker.
All right, come on, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
And up first, he had a stint in the WWF prior to this, but and actually had been there right before The Undertaker came back or came to the WWF. And that is Barry Windham.
No, Barry Windham, because I think, you know, they've tried bringing Barry Windham in as the Stalker later in the mid-90s, and that didn't work. I think also Barry has some stuff outside of wrestling that prevented.
He did.
But, you know, I remember when he showed up as the Stalker and the announcers were like, that's Barry Windham. Why is he called the Stalker? Why is he? And was he the Widowmaker?
He was the Widowmaker in 89. Yes, this was prior to The Undertaker coming in.
Yeah. So I think Barry was too well known to be The Undertaker. So I'm going to put him at five.
Five, okay. Up next, someone who jumped to the WWF about a year later, and actually I think might have replaced Mark Calaway or Mark Callis in the Skyscrapers, and that is Sid Vicious.
Again, I think Sid too well known and too, I mean, this is going to sound weird because Sid was never Mr. Personality, but I think he had too much aura to play a dead man.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put him at four.
Okay. This superstar had just come to the WWF at the same time as The Undertaker. He wasn't there very long, but he would come back years later as Goldust. That is Dustin Rhodes.
You know, given what he did with Goldust, and maybe it would have been too early in his career because he was still kind of green and was still working on just the fundamentals of the wrestling, but I think Dustin could have ran with it. And not been the Undertaker that we know.
Yeah.
I think he could have given it his own spin. I'm gonna put him at two, just
okay. I like
to
that.
See what you have. Yeah.
Up next, someone who was a tag team wrestler at this time, and that's where I'm giving you the tag team wrestler's name, but he went on to become big time in the WWF and in WCW, and that is Master Blaster Steel, aka Diesel, aka Kevin Nash.
Kind of like Sid, I think the personality of Nash. Well, when Nash got to be Nash and even to be Diesel, he got to show personality as Master Blaster Steel and as Oz. I don't think he really had that. But as Super Shredder in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, he did get to show off. I wonder if he and Vanilla Ice still talk. just out of buns and giggles, I'm going to put him at three just to see who your number one is. And again, hoping it's Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
It is not Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker. It is someone who eventually, again, came to the WWF. But in the WCW, he was known as the Night Stalker. I'm talking about Brian Clark, who was Adam Bomb in the WWF. So by default, he's number one. But, you know, I went from guys of size and, you know, the strength and maybe kind of the personality, because with Mark Calaway, it was something different. I you know, I can't put my finger on it, but some of the guys just kind of resonate and work.
Yeah, and I think you say Brian Clark, because I always get Brian Clark and Brian Adams confused.
Yeah, Brian Adams was the guy that sang Summer of 69.
Right, he's the Canadian, And again, I still don't know why they didn't bring in a guy and call him Rod Stewart when they had Brian Adams and Sting in WCW. But I think Brian Clark, you know, again, kind of like you said with Goldust, I think he could have made it work. Again, not being the Undertaker that we know, but, and, you know, once you get him away from the goofiness of Adam Bomb, which, granted, the beginning of The Undertaker was also kind of goofy, but I think he had the skill to make it. I would now I want to go into a multiverse and see what that would have looked like.
And that is kind of the basis of this week's episode as well, is building off of this Undertaker, because like I said, 35 years is when he debuted. He's still, making towns as far as like behind the scenes stuff and doing the podcast and all of that. Again, 35 years ago, would have never predicted the staying power and the longevity of it. But, with wrestling gimmicks, like we said earlier, Goldust, Kane, there are some of those that kind of just come around and the right person gets that gimmick. Could Terry Taylor, there's always a long running joke of the Red Rooster, had he really gotten into that character, could it have worked and developed into something other than what it was? We also look at wrestlers who either pass away or leave, or go to another company, dusting off those gimmicks, with Doink the Clown, for example, when Matt Bourne left the WWF in the mid-90s, Ray Apollo became Doink. And I think most fans obviously didn't know that, but then probably one of the more blatant ones was in 96 during the start of the Monday Night Wars. Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, Diesel and Razor Ramon respectively, go to the Turner organization, WCW. But the IP is Diesel and Razor. And so Jim Ross starts teasing that Diesel and Razor are coming back. And even though I was an adult and knew better, I thought for a minute that maybe they were coming back. I did not expect Ray Bogner and Glenn Jacobs to be these two characters. And so I guess more of this week's topic is kind of just talking about that IP and could that work if there's a character years down the road, could we see characters come back? I've read and heard on other podcasts with AI, especially nowadays, that, we may see returns of our fate, depending on and not necessarily just wrestling, but even movies or music in general. I think it was at the Hall of Fame induction when Paul Bearer was inducted. I believe they do a hologram or something of Paul Bearer during the course of that. I feel like they did something with him to kind of bring him to life. Do you see an era or a time where we dust off some of these gimmicks from the past and give them to another wrestler? We've said it before, Hollywood has nothing original. We do see reboots and could reboots in wrestling work with, a young indie guy coming in as the new, and not calling it the new, but just a continuation like Mexico has done with La Parca, for example. These characters take different generations and continue on as something different. Do you ever see that being a thing in pro wrestling? And would you want to see that be a thing in pro wrestling?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to unpack and touch on here. One, I think, with the cases you mentioned, Doink and then Diesel and Razor and La Park as well. I think if you're someone, a masked person or a face painted person, it's easier to replace if you get someone with the same body type. That, clearly if you go from Bastion Booger to Sean Stasiak, I don't know why Sean Stasiak, I'm trying to think of somebody that's muscular, and you'd be like, hey, it's the same guy. You're like, no, it's not. And that's, if you go back to the original Demolition, Moondog, is it Moondog Spot? Was
I think Rex
Moondog's Rex instead of Smash.
Yeah.
And the fans recognized him as Moondog, so they had to replace him. As I was saying, so when Doink was replaced, I don't think people were really paying that much attention back at the time to criticize everything. And then also after the original Ultimate Warrior died and they brought in the second Ultimate Warrior, And they replace Kane, I believe, later on too. So I think that was the problem with Kane and, or not Kane, Diesel and Razor is one, they look like AI created versions of like, hey, copy this, but
yeah,
you're off by a bit.
Right.
But it was, I think it was also too soon.
Yeah.
To do so, like these fans were expecting, and also, you know, just the way things were at that time. You know, I think you can bring them in. And I remember going to an indie show and it was like advertising Abdullah the Butcher. And we called him when the guy came out that clearly was not Abdullah, we just started calling him Son of Abdullah. and that's what, you know, in the Mexican and Lucha Libre, you have the El Hilo de whoever. And so maybe you do that where you say, you know, El Hilo de Diesel and or Diesel Jr. And so maybe don't try to pass it off as the same wrestler, but acknowledge the history of the character.
And that's, you know, and this is where the whole wrestling conversation to me is so interesting because, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned Randy Colley, who was Moondog Rex. And then mm-hmm. I believe, if history is right, kind of came up with the idea for Demolition mm-hmm. and was the original Smash. But the fans, like you said, were chanting Moondog at him. Like, we would never go to a movie or probably even a Broadway show where, you know, just random, say Brad Pitt is in that movie. We would, well, I don't know any really Brad Pitt roles, but Arnold Schwarzenegger is in a movie. We're watching Commando. We wouldn't start shouting Terminator, you know, during that movie. It's always been interesting to me how Hollywood is so, you know, even though it's the same in a lot of terms, you know, Kevin Nash is playing the character of Diesel or playing the character of Master Blaster or Oz or whatever the case may be. But these guys, you know, when we see them out in public, hey, it's Diesel. Or, you know, I guess that's kind of a bad example because he became Kevin Nash and we knew him better. But, you know, we wouldn't say, hey, it's Mark Calloway. If we saw him on the street, it'd be like, hey, it's The Undertaker. Can I get a picture or whatever the case may be? So it is interesting, again, that whole dynamic of character versus person versus, you know, how they behave or act in on social media or in real life scenarios. So,
yeah. Well, and you remember when Bray Wyatt first showed up, he got a lot of Husky Harris chants. So, and I think part of that obviously is just the annoying wrestling fan who wants to be the smart, you know, and be like, oh, I know that's who that is. And instead of enjoy, you know, I've always brought up, you know, my love of Chikara and how the fans would play along with whatever was going on. And so when Archibald Peck lost a loser leave town match, and then all of a sudden the handsome and mysterious stranger showed up at the next show, even though everyone knew who it was, they played along and be like, you know, and they would chant, we don't know you, who are you? And then ultimately when he was unmasked and revealed to be Archibald Peck, everyone was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And maybe it's because it's a larger audience. And so you get more people who are trying to be cool or whatever. But why we don't play along with something that we know is not legitimate, you know, or 100% real, as I'm air quoting. Because like you said, you go to a movie and you buy into that. You know, I don't really believe Vin Diesel knows how to drive a car, because I don't even know if Vin Diesel knows how to dress himself properly in the morning. But you know, when I'm watching Fast and Furious, I'm questioning life decisions, but I'm also being like, you know, Vin Diesel is this car driver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it works. And I don't, but yeah, you go to wrestling and you're like, oh, well, you know, I can't think of a good example, but.
Right. No, we've talked about it before. You know, wrestling fan, nobody hates wrestling more than wrestling fans. I find myself from time to time doing it as well, but again, that suspension of disbelief and just kind of buying into it and enjoying it for what it is. It's entertainment. And, yeah. you know, it doesn't, and I think as I've gotten older, I've, you know, like you said earlier, you've kind of let stuff, you know, it's not as like, I don't care if I see every episode of Monday Night Raw, you know, or I don't have to know every championship reign that John Moxley had in a, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. at the time in my life where those kinds of things were important, where I wanted to have seen every WrestleMania, or I wanted to have seen every episode of this or known about this or that or whatever. But, you know, as you get older, it's like, who cares? So, mm-hmm. I think that kind of becomes the mantra of watching it and just being like, okay, yeah, no, you would think after 25 years, the referees would catch on that when they hear a chair tap on the, you know, that yeah. they're not really getting, you know, like that we were talking about the Eddie Guerrero stunt from, you know, how many times do we see that? But it's still it's an entertaining yeah. spot. Spin that disbelief for a minute, or, you know, the ref bumps, or this referee, you know, got hit by the, you know, or why is it that John Cena can hit his finisher on Brock Lesnar 6 times and not beat him, but hits it once in a pre-match interview and he's laid out for, you know, 6 minutes or whatever the case would be. So again, it's taking that disbelief and suspending it and just kind of going with it and having some fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this could be a, you know, another episode in of itself where the tropes in wrestling are there because they work on one hand, but there are some tropes that I think need to be, banned. And one of those is the ref bump. I think if you can't figure out how to get to an ending of a match without a ref bump, you probably are in the wrong line of business. But that's just me because TNA overdid it with like every single main event match. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a good topic for down the road. But again, want to remind folks about the Survivor Series suggestions. We want to hear from you on that. We want to hear from you on this. You know, do you see AI playing a role in wrestling? I think that, you know, creatively we may see more of that. But, you know, will characters be generated from it? Will, you know, I think you and I both, I hope you don't mind me saying this. I mean, I rely on it to generate some the art side of things. I'm not artistic at all. So I do use it to generate the artwork now for the podcast and that kind of stuff. But
yeah, anybody that watches my Out of Touchstone stuff, if it wasn't for AI, I'd still be working on the first episode and all the drawings would be stick figures. So
yeah,
it does help.
So I think that there's it's a good tool. It is, I hope that it doesn't replace, like, you know, mass layoffs and get rid of all the writers and, you know, so it's just Paul Levesque entering in these ideas in AI one day. I hope that doesn't happen. But yeah,
maybe we should do that for an episode, is use AI to book I know other people have done that too, just but real quick, I'm gonna tangent, and this could be something we say for another episode, where going back to your, you know, blind ranking and tying that in with the character is, you know, there's a lot of times where fans will be like, oh, WCW, you know, missed the mark with Steve Austin and Dustin Rhodes, or WWE, you know, wasted such and such. And that, because a wrestler will not be a big star in one company and then go to another and then, you know, become huge. But it's like, for me, it's like, well, the reason they became huge is because of a character change. And that character change may not have happened if they stayed in the company, you know, in one company. You know, right now we can look at Timeless Tony Storm. That character wouldn't have evolved in WWE the way that it did in AEW.
Right.
And the biggest one is Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at Steve Austin in WWE for that first 2 years, you know, he was just the ringmaster. He wasn't, I think we've talked about it before. You weren't at were you at the house show in St. Louis when it was Goldust versus Shawn Michaels main event? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That third match on the card was Steve Austin versus Duke Drosy, and you could hear a pin drop when Austin came, because it was the week before King of the Ring 96. Again, if curtain call doesn't happen, Steve Austin doesn't win King of the Ring, doesn't utter Austin 316, are we talking about Steve Austin in 2025 as the biggest star in wrestling? So
yeah, there were so many factors, you know, and even Jake the Snake being on his born again
yeah
gimmick, you know, and I guess it was part of his real life too at the time, but you know, had all those, you know, there are so many factors that go into that, you know, and like you said, you can't always blame the company. You know, I know, and people who, I don't publicly talk like this, but you know, if people saw the Snapchats or the texts that we sent to each other,
right,
who would think I hate AEW, which I don't, but you know,
you can't even spell AEW.
People are complaining about, sometimes it does come out AWE. Oh, but, you know, people are, you know, putting that picture up from a few weeks ago where we talked about where it was Ricky Saint and Cody, CM Punk, and, you know, like Tony Khan dropped the ball with these guys. And it's like, no, it's not. It's different circumstances. It's different situations, things that work and don't work. And, you know, like you said, had Austin not gone to WWF and things hadn't happened the way that they did, would the Ringmaster have gone into the Hall of Fame and become the biggest, you know, would I have a bottle of Ringmaster beer behind me on my shelf? No, of course not. But it's the timing, it's the circumstances, it's how it all plays out. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I don't blame Tony Khan for any of, you know, those guys and women who jumped to WWE. It's just, I don't blame Triple H or Vince for the ones that jumped over to AEW and found success. You know, it's sometimes it's just not that right fit at that time. So
yeah. And I mean, what if Mark Calloway had become Eggman? As he was afraid of being.
It is interesting. It's fun to kind of think back and look back at those things and remember you know, that era of wrestling and again the hokiness. Because again, you're suspending disbelief when you're trying to be convinced that this guy is dead and you know, a zombie, for lack of a better word. I don't think they ever called him a zombie, but I guess that was kind of the implication. But then also, is he an undertaker? You know, does he work at a funeral home and then he comes and wrestles at night? I don't know.
And if fans hadn't been so jaded, would the ECW zombie, could it have been a huge star?
Yeah, that would have been interesting for sure. Well, Chad, is there anything else on your mind before we wrap up this week's episode?
Let's see. I got my snark in on John Cena's Intercontinental title reign. I got an AEW reference. No, I mean, I'm just going to plug again, Out of Touchstone and Pharaoh's Vault. You can find that on YouTube at Out of Touchstone. I like what we're doing over there. But, you know, hopefully once we get out of 1995 and into 96, things start to pick up. I hope. I can't remember what's on the slate for then, but
well, I like
it
how
can't it be worse than 1995
years. So you're doing, I know it won't stay that way, but you know, you're 30 years removed from 95, obviously, right now. So I do like that aspect of it. And you do a lot of, I know you work your ass off with the production of that. So again, kudos to you on that.
Thanks to ChatGPT.
Yeah, well, but you're putting in the hours though to edit and all that. So
yeah. If I ever get a job, it'll be interesting to see how this how far the YouTube series falls in production value. But no, it's great. It's fun. It's a good hobby, and we're looking. I think I've discontinued the double feature Friday because those just were not attracting views and. I mean, they were very simple to do anyway. So if I want to bring it back, I can easily do that in a day. But we'll hopefully have some new things coming up after the first of the year. But until then, we just have to get through Survivor Series. And I don't think WWE has a pay-per-view in December.
No,
I think they just have Cena's last match. And they tried to move that to be opposite AEW's last pay-per-view. But NBC was like, no, we have you scheduled on this date and we're going to keep it there because no one's watching your show anyway.
Well, I'll be watching. Friends, we thank you for watching this week's episode. Again, don't forget those Survivor Series suggestions and the My 1-2-3 Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. We will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.